Now, obviously, the Feast of Tabernacles is the wedding feast. But it doesn't have anything to do with what we've grown up or what the world thinks that weddings are, what marriage is. In the world, 90% of the attraction, there have been several studies done like this, but 90% of the attraction between a man and a woman denigrate within 2 years of the marriage. Which is a frightening thought. With me, I mean, you know, I've never been married, but the longest I've ever gone with someone was 3 years. And 6 months after, I was bored. And it was really strong attraction at first. And then I went, right down the tubes. And there's a couple across the street, the guy just died recently. They'd been married for 57 years. When he died, she knew absolutely nothing about him. She didn't even know what he did for a living.
It's bizarre.
She had no knowledge of what assets he had. That all her life they'd had separate bank accounts. There was absolutely no joining. She had no idea what he thought about things. It was, to me, the ultimate of each individual protecting themselves. And, of course, now she's miserable, or her estate is in such a mess that they probably never will figure it out. You know, it's just a joke. And every marriage that I'm aware of, without exception, is based, first of all, it's based on common idolatry. And second of all, it's based on acting. And so the ones who are the best actors and actresses, who have the common value systems and common idolatry, have the appearance of working for a while, except idols only last about 7 years, and then... And so, in what we're about, it's something totally different. Because your only responsibility is that you bubble forth. But something, a mystery takes place when the two of you are looking at a third place. And the mystery is that without even knowing it, something begins to happen. And first of all, as we've said in here, all the little things that bother you about the other person become precious. And that's a real mystery. I don't understand that. And then the second thing that happens is that you begin to sense that it is a continual expanding awareness, and therefore it's a growth. Love grows, but it's not the love that's perceived by the senses, it's the love that we can't bring into our consciousness. If we bring it into our consciousness, we pollute it. And I've seen it in every marriage in the group. I mean, and I'm not taking anything away from anybody who thinks that they like somebody or not. It really doesn't matter if you even like each other very much. There's something that happens in a relationship in which, for some unknown reason, you're attracted to another party. But in every case, that initial attraction is based on need. Your need that person fulfills. That's the initial attraction. It always is. But let's face it, there's probably 100,000 women and maybe 700,000 men that would meet that need in each of you.
Yeah.
So is that just what buy everybody?
Yeah. 700,000 men, I caught it.
Oh, okay.
The fleet's in.
Maybe 7 million. Yeah, but the point of it is that that initial attraction is based on need. It's only need. You can't make anything need about it.
No.
Okay, then you go through a period of time, and you find out whether that person, you test that person subconsciously. And the test of that is that if you spend more of your time thinking about yourself, if you could chronicle your thoughts or codify your thoughts or something, and then every day you list them, and the ones that were connected with her were, if that list was longer than the ones that are connected with you, then it has a chance. That's all it is. And then slowly but surely, there's a renewal of your mind that takes place as a result of the cross. That's it. That's the mystery. And it's all fulfilled. But all these harebrained ideas that the world has about what love and marriage are, they've never in history worked. All the romance novels are wrong. All of your images of what you think marriage should be or what your partner should be are wrong. Nothing that you think is right. Again, the test is that if you're going to be married, then she has to become every woman and you have to become every man. And you have to be naked, not just physically, but naked in terms of thoughts and yet unashamed. The reason you're not ashamed is because you see the different purpose. Because you're going to be attracted to a whole lot of different people, both of you. Well, everybody that's married in the group would have been destroyed. The cement that holds it together has nothing to do with anything that's perceived with the senses. The cement that holds it together is the New Jerusalem, that which is timeless. Because it's the only place. And in truth, the cement that holds the marriage together is the feast that we're talking about, the Feast of Tabernacles. But it has nothing to do with your vows of abstinence or your vows of fidelity. It has nothing to do with it. If a woman or a man is able to be faithful in a marriage over a period of 50 years, it's either because their hormones weren't working or they were a coward. Except in the context of the New Jerusalem. Well, again, that's what we're about. The only reason the time and space exist is so that the bride is tested. Until the bride only wants the husband. Because she has... this is where it's fortunate that we have empathy, but because the bride has tried everybody else. Or everything else. But there's enough marriages. Well, there's not that. Well, there's a few. I mean, nobody, anybody here in this group that's been married before, it's, you know, it's a joke. It's a bunch of lies. It's a bunch of hypocrisy. Because in God's eyes, no one is married. I mean, it doesn't merit, from the purpose, marriage is only in knowledge. But not knowledge just of head, it's knowledge of epignosis, which is mixed with. The two are one flesh, and that means in knowledge. And okay? Anybody have anything to add?
Yeah, whenever you say bubbling forth, you know, I always think of that in rosy terms. Mm-hmm. But it's not. It's like World War III.
Oh, yeah.
It's unpleasant.
Well, no, it's not unpleasant.
It's like the worst gas you could ever have.
No. No.
It's not always like that.
No. Listen. We spend a great deal of time, because of the way our minds work, of telling somebody, you really make me mad, and you do that in the name of prophecy. At the same time, if you would simply spend an equal amount of time, every time you feel compassion or love or appreciation, that too is bubbling forth. I mean, there's no, you know, it's much easier to run around and say, you know, it's much easier to say, there's something about you I really don't like. Than it is, unless you're, you know, I'm great in the lounge lizard act of telling people, you know, or telling somebody what I like about them. But that's not prophecy, because that's manipulative prophecy, and manipulative prophecy is no prophecy.
Yeah.
And half the time, what we do in here in the name of prophecy is manipulation. Because it's all based on control. You want to control the situation. And so you manipulate your prophecies to still be in control. Mm-hmm. Do you know what? Remember I told you that the basis of all action for most of the world is fear. Right? The basis of all of your activities, the basis of all the things you think you're going to do, and career objectives, and on and on and on. But you know what the basis of all fear is? The desire for control. If you had no desire to control, fear would be impossible. Again, I don't give a holy rat's ass what you do. I want you to know what you're doing. All of your attempts at control, which are the basis of your fears, are your attempts at self-divinity. And you make the cross of Christ of none effect, and you do it in the name of caution, in the name of prudence. And Jesus comes along and he says, I thank thee, Father, that you have hid these things from the wise and the prudent, and have revealed them unto babes. The celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles is the celebration of the end of control of your lives. That you've placed the control of your life, not in my hands, but you've placed the control of every aspect of your life in that who controls your life anyway. And therein comes the renewal of your mind. But you can be so sincere. Well, we're just going to do this for a while, see? We're just going to do this. We're just going to do that. And you sound, you know, to the world it sounds very rational, very prudent. To your mind it sounds prudent and nice and neat. God throws up because you make the cross of Christ of none effect by your desire to control, and in that case you're under a curse and your own worst fears will come upon you. Abandon yourself once and for all time. That's what this celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles is about. That's why no religion is allowed on the eighth day of the feast. Because religion is that which controls you. That's the whole purpose of... And again, the control mechanism. God doesn't see labels. God sees activity. God sees the world as the most religious of... I mean, he... You know, Perry and I... The guy who I think is the greatest... One of the three greatest writers of this generation is a guy named Lewis Lapham. And he writes for... He's the editor of Harper's. He wrote a piece about how religious... What a religious ceremony, such things as Super Bowls and baseball, and I mean, it's modern religion, because it's an attempt to return to innocence on the part of the spectator, where good and evil, black and white. But religion isn't optional. The whole human race is religious. The Feast of Tabernacles is your celebration of removing yourself from the arena that all men are about, namely the desire to control. Now, if you know this stuff and continue in control, then you, by definition, become unclean, and you'll be outside the camp. You cannot possibly enter the New Jerusalem, whether or not you're here or not. That's why nobody likes to hear these words. They're not nice words to hear to the flesh. Do you see the tie-in? Your actions are motivated by fear. Tell me something, some plan of yours that you have that isn't motivated by fear, and I'll cut my foot off. Now, by that same token, show me a fear that isn't motivated by your desire to control, and I'll cut the other foot off. God is either totally in your life, or he's not at all. And as we continue in this path, that arena, from the flesh's standpoint, is getting narrower and narrower and narrower and narrower. But from the spirit standpoint, there's freedom beyond comprehension and romance beyond comprehension. Don't quench the Spirit of God in your life by control. Communicating? Mm-hmm. Abandon yourself. Take no thought, etc., 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 etc. Don't say you understand if you don't. How come everybody got so quiet? This stuff isn't optional, folks. This isn't some new religion we're inventing. This is the way of life. Now what?
You know,
he preaches like that, and then he says, "Now what?"
I guess it's just that keep thinking that somehow I'm not going to keep doing this shit. I'm not going to try to control. I'm not going to keep trying to.
You're supposed to keep trying to. That's the test.
It's so abhorrent, though.
Well, it's only abhorrent when you see it. You didn't know you not, I mean, who would have thought? Who would have thought? I can't believe I even say these words, because my life was control. I was a control freak. My whole purpose in life was to get to the world system. My purpose in life was to get as close to the control point as possible. But control, there's nothing new under the sun. But I saw the futility of trying to do that. Now I do dumb stuff. You know, like, I can't, when I stop and look at my, you know, fortunately it doesn't happen a lot, but when I stop and look at myself, I am really an abject idiot. I mean, I'm 48 years old, to have absolutely no money. Everybody that was my companions and my friends when I was, you know, there's senators and federal judges and vice presidents, and here I am sitting in a stupid wheelchair in a stupid house with stupid stuff on my feet and burns because I tried to walk on fire. I mean, talking to a bunch of stupid people.
You knew that was coming up. Wait a minute.
I mean, I'm as far from the control point as possible after the flesh. But in the spirit, believe it or not, this is the center of the universe. Because wherever the cross is preached, therein is the purpose of existence. Now you want to try? Okay, I'll give you guys, you know, I guarantee you something. In both your cases, I guarantee if you try to live together, your relationship will fail. It always has. Check out history. Well, I don't give a fuck what you do. I'm telling you that look at examples. Find me one relationship where they tried to live together where it worked. The reason you want to try to live together is because you desire control. And if you desire control, both of you, two control freaks trying to live together in the same house, trying to apply this doctrine to the flesh, you will fail. Sounds so intriguing. Sounds prudent. Well, we'll just try it for a while. What are you going to try? What are you going to buy? You know, never mind.
I'll put a joint account here. One.
What are you going to try? What are you going to test?
Divide it later.
The purpose of marriage is singular. God doesn't want a bunch of dumb idiots running around going to a judge or a preacher and say, all right, an authority vested in me by the state of Texas, you're now man and wife. The purpose of marriage is to reveal to a body of believers the purpose of the universe. Jesus said, those that are accounted worthy to enter into the kingdom of God neither marry nor are given in marriage. Paul said, let those of you that are married be as though you're not married. What the hell is he talking about? He's talking about a singular issue, that God so defined marriage to be an instrument of revelation, because without marriage you could never, first of all, without the longing between a male and a female, if somebody came along and castrated the human race or fed the women testosterone, so that her desires would be gone. You remember I told you on the mercy seat, there's two cherubim, one male, one female? If that happened, they would turn around. The act of turning around is the act. There's two ways to remove the lid of the Ark of the Covenant. Well, there's three, really, but I'm gonna name two. There's three, but two that are dependent. The two that are within touch. The third one is God Himself, obviously. The second one is by understanding what the seven seals of the ark are. And the first one is by denying the male-female relationship. The cherubim would turn from each other. The ark would mystically open and the world would be destroyed. I know that sounds weird to you, but nevertheless.
So, where does that leave us? I mean, so.
It leaves you to abandon yourself, pick up your cross, and stop planning. If you're going to get, if the impulse is between both of you to get married, present it to the body and say, okay, let's do it. I mean, and again, I'm not going to kick you out. I don't have any pot. The problem with this is that if I try to kick anybody out, nobody pays any attention to me.
Months. Oh, we sort of pay attention to you.
Sometimes.
Used to.
Less.
Do you understand what I'm talking? Does anybody understand?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where the leaven hit was, you know, immediately. Okay, let's get married. Okay, when? Okay, plan. Immediately, right away.
Now, the other, I'm glad you mentioned it, because the celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles is the celebration of the removal of all leaven. Celebration of Passover is a removal of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is a leaven of hypocrisy. Celebration of Tabernacles, of Pentecost, is the removal of the leaven of Herod, which is a seeing of lack. The celebration of Pentecost, The celebration of Tabernacles is the removal of leaven of the Sadducees,
which is
denying the power of God, the efficacy, the ability of Him to act in your abandonment, to your good. That's the point of all this. I'm not saying this stuff to make you feel bad. I'm saying this stuff so that you can begin to live by the power of God. You must know by now that your own stuff hasn't worked too well. You've fucked up everything you've touched. Well, some of you think, well, no, I really haven't. Well, compared to what? Okay, if you make your arena real small, then you can prove you're successful. Make it real little. Man, I'm successful. That's what your parents always try to do to you. I guarantee it. All parents try to make your arena real small so they can say that you're successful. Because if they can't do that, then they can't eat your flesh.
That's wild.
Am I communicating at all?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we just got through in the feast of what? The feast of Yom Kippur. Part of the celebration of that feast was the tearing down the walls of Jericho. Remember? You don't remember. I don't care if you remember or not. The walls of Jericho were the walls which caused your arena to be expanded to infinity so that you no longer have the right of comparison. As long as you're within the little walls of Jericho, and they're big, thick walls, then you can compare yourself in Jericho. You can say, oh my God, look at me. Compared to my high school class, I can't wait till some of you are 48 so you can go back and see the kids you went to high school with. Huh? I'm 48. What?
I was saying it's the truth.
I mean, and it's really neat because you love to be in Jericho. See? Because in Jericho, you can sit there and you can say, God, I pity though. And you don't say these words though. You say, man, all those women really got fat. What you're really saying is, look at me, how nice I kept myself. Or you can say, man, the guy that was the star of the football team, he's now pumping gas. Which you're really saying is, that son of a bitch, I used to envy him all my life, and now I can lord it over him. Uh-huh. You understand? So when you return to Jericho, Jericho is returning to the past in any context, you return to the arena of comparison. And in that arena of comparison, you can justify yourself. And then Jesus comes along and says, you are they which justify yourselves among men, but God knoweth your heart. For those things which are highly esteemed among men are an abomination unto God. So you can't celebrate tabernacles unless the walls of Jericho are down.
Because you can't celebrate tabernacles outside of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem can't have walls.
Amen. Okay. Tabernacles.
Yes.
Can everybody continue without, I mean, is there anything anybody wants to say? I want to start. We start. Tabernacles lasts 8 days, and begins on the 15th of the month of Tishri, which is the 7th month in the Jewish year. And it begins when the moon is at its fullness, because it represents the time. I mean, each month is each cycle of each season, of each day for that matter, tells the full story. If we could only see. So the fullness of the moon represents the fullness of the revelation of the reflected glory of Christ in us every month. The seventh month is the month of completion. Seven means complete. It's completion within time. And so it's the full moon on the seventh month. Therefore, in ancient Kabbalistic wisdom and from the Zohar and from all ancient Judaism and all ancient numerology, the full moon of the seventh month represented the reason that time and space existed. It was the fullness, it was the most complete revelation that was possible in time and space. Everybody understand that? Now, that's the beginning of it. It then lasted for 7 days. And the 7 days represent the 7 days of linear time. On each of those 7 days, new and different sacrifices were required within the temple. And on the total, for instance, so here's the biggie, the number of bullocks that were sacrificed during those 7 days was 70. And 70 was the number of all the nations.
What's a bull?
Bull. And they were there were 70 bulls sacrificed during those 7 days. And a succeeding number, 13 the first day, 12 the second, etc., etc., etc. Until the seventh day, there was one bull. Those 70 bulls were the sacrifices for the 70 nations of the world. And at that time, and as you remember what I told you before, up until at the feast, up until the Tower of Babel, there was all people were of one language and of one tongue. There was one nation, one people. The Tower of Babel, the languages were confused to 70 languages, therefore there became 70 nations. And now there's, what, 168 or something? But, I mean, fundamentally there's still 70 nations or 70 tribes. Okay, the bullocks that were offered during the 7 days of the first part of the Feast of Tabernacles were one bull for each of the 70 nations. That meant that all throughout time, the sacrifice was available to anyone who would come, anyone who accept grace, anyone who would leave cause and effect, enter into grace, the sacrifice was made there. The sacrifice was available. Understand? Now, on the eighth day of the feast, which is a separate feast altogether, it's a separate sacrifice, there was only one bullock sacrifice. During the 7 days, all were welcome. Anybody from the highways and the hedges, and everybody was welcome to come to the feast. And they had a big feast every night, and had a big party every night, and a lot of stuff happened. They had a particular ceremony in which water and wine were poured into the... It was the only time this was done. Water and wine were poured together in a silver funnel into both sides of the altar, representing the water being transfigured to wine. Okay? The human race is water. Israel, or the purpose of life, is the wine. And so every day, while those 70 bullocks were being offered, the water and the wine from the river of living waters and the particular best wine of the country was poured into the altar, mixed with the blood. Okay? Now, On the other hallmark of this feast was that everybody had to live in a booth outside their normal residence. They lived in a structure that was outside their normal living space, out in the open air, and it was made of dimensions of particular, had to be at least so many dimensions high and so many dimensions wide, and they had to live there, eat there, study there. They had to have at least 14 meals in that tabernacle, in that booth. They had to sleep there every night, and it was the indicator that they were a stranger in a strange land. The booth itself could have nothing in it that was made or that a tool had touched. Now, when John sings that this song about come out from your houses of leaves and of clay and feel the joy rising as we enter that day, the eighth day is the day that we are to enter. Now, again, the 7 days living in the seven, in those booths, represented the 7 days of linear time. The eighth day, a unique ceremony occurred. They took the booth that they had made, and they marched around the altar, and they had in one hand they had particles of the booth, and the other hand they had what they called the paradise apple or the ethrog. They'd smashed the booth they smashed the altar at the base of the altar, so that all the leaves and all of the protective devices that had protected them from the sun and the rain that were this thing they were living in was smashed against the base of the altar in their left hand. In their right hand they had the ethrog. Now, there's two, the ancient rabbis had different arguments about what should be what they called a citrion, which was a type of citrus fruit that grew there. But the more knowledgeable authorities say it was a pomegranate. And the pomegranate was by the ancient authorities, the pomegranate was the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And they took that, they smashed the booth in one hand against the base of the altar, and they smashed the paradise apple, mm-hmm. or the pomegranate, and they smashed it until it was totally smashed against the base of the altar. Now, the If you remember, the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil is what causes you to be as a god. You judge for yourself good and evil. The celebration begins, it takes place at the very beginning of the eighth day of the feast, and that's what we're going to celebrate. And symbolically, we're taking that paradise apple, that thing that caused the fall of man, which was the knowledge, the desire to judge for yourself what was good and evil, smash it against the base of the altar, take the things that you built your dwelling with, which and smash it against the base of the altar, and thereby you enter the New Jerusalem, the eighth day. And you stop judging for yourself good and evil. You live in the moment of dependence as a small child. You take no thought. Once you stop judging good and evil, it'll be impossible for you to ever. And the only way you can stop judging good and evil is stop condemning yourself. That's what the blood of Christ is for. When you appropriate the blood, your conscience is cleansed from dead works so that you live in that moment of dependence. Understand?
Yeah.
Now, all of that took place, and we should have, and there's all kinds of wild readings and all kinds of things that are done and weird things that you're going to have to listen to last year's tapes if you want to find out more about it. Then the real feast began. Now, there's a whole bunch of parables, so I'll give you a couple of them. Okay. This is a parable from the Talmud. Oh yeah, the other part, which we did it for a couple of them, the temple treasury had to be emptied so that the temple itself at the end of the seventh day had nothing in it. There was nothing, no money in it. The temple treasury was totally expended. So when the eighth day began, there was no money.
No aces in the hole.
No aces in the hole.
Wow.
Okay. As the day began, he was in the treasury. John 8:12 to 8:19 were spoken on the last day, or the seventh day of the feast. Then he began, John 8:20, began Jesus' pronouncements on the eighth day. You'll read them. Well, different. But as the day began, he was first in the treasury, then in the porches, which enclosed the court of the Gentiles. And this is one of the parables. He said, on the first 7 days of the feast, 70 bullocks were offered according to the 70 nations of the world. But for what is a single bullock offered on the eighth day? It is for the singular nation, Israel. And Israel, the true Israel, is the resident within you. It's the seed of Christ within you, the seed of David. A parable from the Talmud. It is like a great king that said to his servants, make ready a great feast for each of the 7 days. But the last day said he to his friend, make ready some little matter, some intimate supper, that I may refresh myself with thee. I have no advantage or real refreshment in those great feasts with them, but only in this little one with thee. Now, in Psalm 109, which is one of the readings, it says, for my love they are my adversaries, but my prayer is for them. And then it's explained, it says, thou seest, O God, that Israel in the Feast of Tabernacles offers before thee 70 bullocks for the 70 nations. Israel, therefore, say unto thee, O eternal Lord, behold, we offer 70 bullocks for these nations. It is but reasonable, therefore, that they should love us, but on the contrary, as it is written, for our love they are our adversaries. The holy blessed God, therefore, saith to Israel, offer for yourselves on the eighth day. A parable. This is like a king who made a feast for 7 days and invited all the men in the province for these 7 days of the feast. But when those 7 days were past, he saith to his friend, we have done what is needful to be done towards these men. Let now thee and me return to enjoy together whatsoever comes to hand, be it 1 pound of flesh, or fish, or herbs. So the holy blessed God saith to Israel, the eighth day shall be a feast for thee, a holy day. They offer 70 bullocks for the 70 nations to make atonement for them, that the rain may fall upon the fields of all the world. For in the Feast of Tabernacles judgment is made to the as to the waters, and God determines what rain shall be. Anyway, that's the... Because of all of this, the eighth day, and because of its mystery, because it's called, again, it's another feast that's called the Feast of Azareth, or the Feast of Cessation, nothing can be done on that day. No work. You take what is in your hand, and that becomes that which is made for the feast, whether it be a banquet, or a grain of rice. It matters not. Now, we could spend, again, as I said, we could spend the rest of time studying what the real meaning of all these feasts were, but there's another thing that's done. You remember, there are three feasts in which all of Israel had to present themselves before the Lord at the appointed place. The Feast of Passover, the Feast of Pentecost, the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, remember, in every one of those feasts, as they were going up to Jerusalem, they sang the Psalms of Ascent, Psalm 120 to 134. Now, in the Feast of Tabernacles, on the seventh day, the last thing that's done on the seventh day is they repeat the Psalms of Ascent. Even though they're in Jerusalem, in the holy place, yet they repeat the Psalms of Ascent. They don't know why. But we know why. The reason they repeat the Psalms of Ascent there is now they are ascending to the Jerusalem, not after the flesh, but to the new Jerusalem, which is the overriding reality of all of us. Okay? Now, if you all get ambitious, you can't understand what Christ said in John 7, 8, 9, and 10, nor in Luke 9, 51 through Luke 17, 10, unless you understand that he was saying this about the Feast of Tabernacles. He was at the Feast of Tabernacles when he said all those words. You can't understand what's said from John 10, 21 until the end of John, unless you understand the Feast of Passover.
Okay. Can you read the first step again?
It's John 7, 8, 9, and 10. It's John 10, 21. John 7, 1 through 10, 21. Luke 9, 51 to Luke 17, 10. Now, interestingly enough, there was another ceremony, and I'm just going to give you pieces of this as it comes to mind, because there's no way in hell you're going to understand all of it if you haven't. But part of the ceremony during each of the 7 days was a unique thing. When you realize there were 144,000 priests in the temple. There were 24 courses of priests. Now, many of those 144,000 were all over the countryside, except on the feast where they're required, and then they had to come in to the temple. Okay. They selected the four youngest priests, and in the courtyard of the temple, there were four huge lanterns or lamps or whatever, on each of the cardinal points of the compass. And they made a ladder, and they climbed up, and within each of those lanterns, each one of those held about 100 and some baths, which is about, I think if I remember right, it's 38 gallons of olive oil. Then they took the wick, they made a wick that was made from the linen garments that the high priest wore when he entered into the Holy of Holies. Remember, he had to go in and out four times? They took those garments, the white linen garments that he wore, to enter into the Holy of Holies, they made a wick for this light. And anyway, we ended up with a whole bunch of light. The idea was that there was not a corner in Jerusalem that wasn't illuminated by the light from the temple.
Just like Passover with the candle.
Right. Now, the reason in all of the scriptures in Zechariah, which you'll never understand unless you know about him taking the candle and searching out Jerusalem, or the lantern of the light, that's what happened. That when that was going on is when Jesus said, "I am the light of the world." Now, the time at which, when they were pouring the water and the wine into the altar, is the time that Jesus said, "He that believeth on me, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water." Now, there's an ancient text that's a translation in the original Aramaic of what he actually said there. You got to recognize that some of this stuff's been translated 50 jillion times. I wished I were organized. Now remember, the hallmark of all of these feasts was rejoicing. There was massive rejoicing. Dancing, and it was a party. We're talking party. And again, hear me. All desire in a human being to party, to dance, is the seed of Christ in all men desiring to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. All bars, all concerts, all everything is the seed of Christ in you, in all men desiring to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. That's why, but only the Feast of Tabernacles will satisfy that desire. Everything else is a vain shadow. Peace? Okay, what Jesus said. So there's all kinds of rejoicing going on. Everybody's happy. Jesus said, this is what the original thing said. He said, "Have you such wonderful rejoicing at drawing and pouring a little water from the pool of Siloam onto the altar? He that believeth in me, whole rivers of living water shall flow out of his own belly, producing joy unspeakable in himself and those around him." Now, what happened in the Feast of Tabernacles?
This thing about the priest garments from the Day of Atonement being used to light the four lampstands ties into what I've been seeing this year, that the reason that Israel can experience this joy, and the reason that Israel can pour out to the nations, is because of the affliction of the fast of Ab, the days of awe, the affliction of the fast of Yom Kippur, and because of the Day of Atonement. Because
they got burnt feet, too. Yeah.
That's why they can dance.
Because
they can't dance. That was why. Rabbi had said.
Remember, I've told you so often that a believer never, ever, ever has to make a decision. Once, if you're in Egypt, you have to make decisions all the time. Once you leave Egypt, you never again have to make a decision. Because of something called the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud. Now let's go read that a minute. Numbers. Does anybody remember where it is?
No.
If I had good notes, I could tell you. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. I think it's 15, but I probably am not right. It's not 50. It's Leviticus. It's Numbers 9. But I'm probably not right. It is Numbers 9. Oh, I know why it's Numbers 9, 15.
Aw, you're so smart.
It's pretty good for somebody on drugs. before we read this, can't we read the thing about...
Well, that also happened this time.
It's the same day.
I know.
Exodus 3.
Are you at Numbers 15?
Numbers 9.
9:15.
Are you at Numbers 9:15? And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up. Now, an interesting thing in the Hebrew, it says, is all you know, on the day that the tabernacle reared itself up. Moses got all these instructions, built, and all the goldsmiths, they made all these intricate little thingies, and it was laying in a pile for 3 months. And now what the hell to do with it? All it did, God told him to build a bunch of stuff. A little golden stuff, and a little silver stuff, and little chains, and little boards of acacia, linen stuff. And it was like the world's most complicated jigsaw puzzle. But there was no way, God didn't give him any, if you read about it, God didn't give him any instructions how to put it together. So on the Feast of Tabernacles, on that day, the tabernacle reared itself.
This Bible claims that that took place exactly 1 year from the Exodus and exactly 9 months from the arrival at Sinai. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's interesting if it is.
Well, I don't want to think about that. Okay, so that took place on the day of tabernacles, on the Feast of Tabernacles. On the day the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent of the testimony. And at even there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until the morning. So it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night. And when the cloud was taken up, from the tabernacle, then after that the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. At the commandment of the Lord the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of the Lord that they pitched. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. When the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. And so it was, when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in their tents. And according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was, when the cloud abode from even until the morning, and the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night that the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. Or whether it were 2 days, or a month, or a year, that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereon for the children of Israel to abode in their tents, and journeyed not. But when it was taken up, they journeyed. At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in their tents. At the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Now, that happened on the Feast of Tabernacles.
I want to make sure you get the point.
Now what's the cloud? In you, in here, the cloud is doubt. All it doubt means is that you have one or more options, two or more options. If you have an option in any arena of your life, you wait. You do nothing. No matter what it appears to the senses. That's the cloud is down. When the cloud is raised, there's no options. You move. That's what faith means. The testing of faith is to be confronted with stimuli during the time the cloud is down. Mm. Understand? Mm-hmm. All right. Also on this day is when Moses announced that the tabernacle of God was in them. In Exodus 13. Also on this day was when Solomon's temple was dedicated and the Shekinah glory descended into the temple and filled it.
What does it mean?
The Shekinah means God seen in time and space. Okay. The revelation in Revelation, Revelation 7, refers to the Feast of Tabernacles. Then also the law was placed in the Ark of the Tabernacle on the Feast of Tabernacles in Deuteronomy 31. Okay? Let's read Revelation 7. Verse 9. And after this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms. Well, that's the other thing. They have the palm branches in their hands. And cried with a loud voice, "Salvation to our God, which sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb." And all the angels stood round about the throne, and about the elders, and the four beasts, and fell before the throne on their faces, and worshipped God, saying, "Amen, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be unto our God forever and ever." And one of the elders answered, saying unto me, What are these which are arrayed in white robes, and whence come they? And I said unto him, "Sir, thou knowest." And he said to me, "These are they which came out of great tribulation, and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore are they before the throne of God and serve him day and night to his temple, in his temple. And he that sitteth on the throne shall dwell among them. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. Neither shall a sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them, and shall lead them unto living fountains of water. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes." That's not going to happen someday. That's now, as the understanding of the meaning of the Feast of Tabernacles penetrates this consciousness. Okay? Now let's look at the final one, Revelation 21. I'm sorry, Revelation 19. "And after these things I heard a great voice of much people in heaven saying, Hallelujah, salvation and glory and honor and power unto the Lord our God, for true and righteous are his judgments, for he hath judged the great whore, which did corrupt the earth with her fornication, and hath avenged the blood of his servants at her hand." And again, he judged the great whore in the type here at the smashing of the paradise apple at the base of the altar on the last thing on the seventh day. Because now the whore's forehead is gone. Judging for yourself, good and evil, living in cause and effect.
It feels like.
"And again they said, Alleluia, and her smoke rose up forever and ever. And the 24 elders and the four beasts fell down and worshipped God that sat in the throne, saying, Amen, Alleluia. And a voice came out of the throne, saying, Praise our God, all ye his servants, so that ye fear him, both small and great. And I heard as it were the voice of a great multitude, and as the voice of many waters, and as the voice of mighty thundering, saying, Alleluia, for the Lord our God omnipotent reigneth. Let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him, for the marriage of the Lamb is come, and the wife hath made herself ready. And to her was granted that she should be arrayed in the fine linen, clean and white, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. And he saith unto me, Write, Blessed are they which are called unto the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he saith unto me, These are the true sayings of God. There are 24 courses of priests, and each of those 24 courses represent the 24 fundamental offices in the body.
Okay.
And the four beasts are the four beasts that are in Ezekiel's vision, but they are also the four beasts that are on the cherubim, which we'll get into when we get farther on the star maps, okay. Because they represent the face of the man, the face of the lion, the face of the eagle. In the face of the, whatever the other one is. Who?
The ferret face. The cream of a stick.
Wait till you see what that stuff means.
Yeah.
I'm still working on seven heads.
Yeah. So much. No.
No, it's not. Don't worry about it. You'll know it without worrying about it.
Yeah.
Now, the celebration that we are about to undertake at the Feast of Tabernacles this Saturday is the point in time in which you come to the understanding in which says that to the pure in heart all things are pure. That you see God is all and in all. Therefore you make no distinctions with regard to something being religious or not religious, for God is all and in all. You begin to see, that's why all the music that will be played, there's no religious music. It's all music that the world thinks are love songs, which are really the songs written by the seed of Christ longing and calling for the bride of Christ. And once your ears are circumcised that you can hear, then you cannot possibly ever hear a song on the radio. You can never see anything where you won't see the mystery unfold, whether it be a tree or a drunk. You'll stop being religious because you stop judging for yourself good and evil. You live in a moment of dependence on the Father, and in that context, remember, all of this is done in the mind. The greatest enemy that you have is your propensity to judge for yourself what's good and evil, what's right and wrong. That's why Christ said, when he was prophesying about modern religion, he said, you shall travel over sea and land to make one convert, and when he is made, you shall make him twice the child of hell that you are.
What does that mean?
Well, you're automatically, by birth, by genetic, you will judge for yourself good and evil. Mm-hmm. But then religion comes along and tells you much more good and evil.
Oh, so you're really sucked into it.
You're twice the child of hell. Okay, is everybody ready to party?
Yeah.
With party and knowledge.
Makes it sound so heavy.
This is hilarious. Oh,
shit. I hurt.
And then I'm
going to
experience.
Does anybody have any? And this is I'm serious. You normally spend 3 weeks or more studying it, so we just barely scratched the surface. But can everybody at least understand it enough to appreciate the Feast of Tabernacles? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Are you going to do any more tabernacle studying tomorrow?
We're not meeting tomorrow. Because it's the thing, the meeting that the school that all the
teachers. Whatever reason, fine.
Next meeting is 7 o'clock Saturday night.
At the Engineers Club.
Where's that?
Republic Bank Tower downtown. Is that?
8th
floor. Engineers Club. 7
eighth
o'clock.
Floor.
Dress up.
Be there.
8th floor. 8th day.
That's cute.
We're overlooking the most religious thing in Dallas, Thanksgiving Square. Okay? Take it, big guy.